welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, folks, I'm going to just tell you, welcome back, and guess what I'm going to tell you, too? It's Now or Never. This is the Now or Never show, even though it is the Reclaiming the Republic show. It's also, if we don't do that, if we don't reclaim the Republic, the name Republic will go away. We will be an administrative state underneath the new global government. And your state governments, your county governments will just become administrative states of those. And the level of tyranny and corruption, if you think it's bad now, wait. Wait until, you know, foreign governments that don't even share the principles that your parents, your grandparents, your great-grandparents tried to instill upon you through, you know, passing these things down generation to generation. Folks, you know, look at the times and look at what we're seeing, you know, and look at the election process. See, it's interesting that during the Trump administration, he really did nothing to clean up the rigged system that he complained about when he was being elected. It's rigged! Remember Colorado? Remember in 2016, Colorado? It's rigged! Come on. We were played. And so, I just want you to understand that understanding the Constitution and placing context to all of this is important. That's why we've come up with these petitions regarding the election laws and Congress's ability to change those things. That's got to be done away with. That actually has to become an amendment that the Congress's only authority over election is to ensure that the states are requiring that only U.S. citizens, and undoing some of its laws, the federal laws of allowing other people. I mean, we might, the federal government, if we gave them the ability, they would be mailing ballots. If they controlled the national voting system, they would mail ballots to China, and China would pump millions of ballots in. America could have 5 billion votes in the next election, even though we don't even have 330-some million here. Imagine that. And everybody go, look at the great the outcry of the people wanting Biden for a second term. That's how it plays out, folks. That's the tune of corruption. And nobody, I mean, if the media actually reported that we had, 1 billion votes for Biden, nobody would even question it. Hold it. I mean, that's more than double the population. It's over triple the population. What are you talking about? Anyway. What kind of president does America deserve? I'm hoping to try to schedule a follow-up conversation with former representative and current dean of Regent University, Michelle Bachmann. And I would love to have that conversation about what America really deserves in a president of the United States and understanding the job and role. I'd love to hear her take on what she would have done, with doing a little hindsight. And then, for the 12 to 16 election. Then I would love to see her foresight on understanding where we are. And what I'd like to do is help her with, my views, or I should say the framers' views on the Constitution and how my analysis on how this all lays out with foreign policies and so forth. I would love to have her go on the record. If she was president, this is what she would do as well. Oh, yeah, folks. Because really, when it comes down to it, when you understand the Constitution, there's only so many things you can do. And if you're going to get it right, you got to do it right. And so, there may be some nuances in the words you use. There may be some differences in, how you get dressed and what state you start with. But as I lay it out, I bet you anything she'd agree. And she'd go, oh, my gosh. How powerful would that be? Can we actually ignore? See, the battleground states, I see the battleground states as California, New York. The only reason Ohio, Florida, these other states are that way because we allow violations of the Constitution to coexist in, you know, in a paradigm where supposedly things are supposed to be constitutional. And so the reason why California and New York are so far gone is because they've completely abandoned the Constitution. Ohio has not. Florida has not. And as a matter of fact, if these states, if all states started basically, you know, pounding the mantra of compliance to the Constitution, then in our elections moving forward, oh, my friends, it would be so awesome. It would be so awesome because no politician could violate the oath that if the state actually enforced, because Missouri has the laws on the books to actually enforce and remove anybody in the state that violates their oath of office to fail to support the Constitution. Look at it. If we actually started educating people what was constitutional, what wasn't constitutional, then Democrats would not even be able to sit in office. They would actually have to become constitutional. Therefore, they couldn't become Democrats. The party would actually become obsolete. This is what I've been telling you. This is why if we start shifting and actually focusing on the Constitution, this is why I've been telling you the IAP, the Independent American Party, and the Constitution Party should be competing to the top of that mountain. And who can become the most purest constitutional party for America? And then all of a sudden, all the agendas go away. We don't care about conservatism anymore. We only care about compliance to the Constitution. The governments are limited and defined. That people are free to choose for themselves. That states have their own enumerated powers. That they can go off, they could go do things themselves if they chose to and if the people delegated those powers to them. See, sovereignty. And I know this is really hard to get because I deal with smart people that just have a stumbling block. They look at people as the sovereigns. You know, we the people are sovereigns. Well, God is the ultimate sovereign, and he has the ability to enforce that. But when we create government with with delegated powers and the authority to enforce those powers. That makes them sovereigns over those things. We have this complex concept of sovereignty between the federal government and state governments. They both have their levels of sovereignty, and they're not to commingle. Anyway, you know, I've been plugging, you know, and begging for people to support Paul Venable's campaign, and I point people to my endorsement page. Please support these candidates. We're losing time. The election is a month away. And so what are we going to do? What are you going to do? Let's get things done, because these folks that are carrying this message need money to be able to do that. They need to be able to run an ad. They need to be able to get out there and state, you know, how important the Constitution is. And I wish I wasn't so busy, because I could be helping so much more. But anyway, as you know, the show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that goes through the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions, period. Okay, so we've kind of covered the importation and this, you know, the importation of slaves and the immigration and all of that, and the taxation that they would be able to tax on all of these people coming in. And by the way, this duty tax imposed on such importation did not just, you know, include slaves. I mean, did it isolate to slaves only? No. But that was the intent, because as they would import these people, they would be sold, and everybody else that got off the boat, as soon as they got off the boat, boom, they were gone. And so it was the people who bought the slaves had to pay the duty, had to pay that tax. So the intent was to ensure that the federal government was being compensated, you know, and are, and in a way, they were using taxation as a punishment for this insidious trade, this insidious form of labor. Anyway, the next power in Section 9 is one that we have to clarify, and one that requires a petition. And so I've created another petition. This power is the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. Needs full this. So let me get into how this needs full clarity. So what is rebellion? Rebellion is against the Constitution. So have we had, in the past 10 years, have we had rebellious behavior where people were actually opposing not the U.S. government's unconstitutional laws, but opposing the Constitution and demanding more protests or using protests and so forth to demand more violations of the Constitution, like defunding the police and not enforcing the law? Have we had anything like that? Absolutely, and that is rebellion. That's rebellion against the law. It's a rebellion against the Constitution. So to be clear, to be very clear, this rebellion is not rebellion against a tyrannical government. And as a matter of fact, the spirit of government, what is going on in Congress is absolutely rebellion. And Congress is basically trying to flex their muscles to show that they are our gods. Are you kidding me? In America? How is this happening, folks? We'll be right back after these two promos. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so, excuse me. So, when we look at the suspension and the suspension of the writ of habeas corpus, in other words, the ability to just go and grab somebody as a prisoner and hold them as a prisoner, during the Civil War, when Lincoln did this and arrested municipalities and arrested people in office and so forth, and he used his power, supposedly emergency powers, he was told he couldn't do it. It was very clear that this right here, the suspension of the writ of habeas corpus, was well defined. During the Virginia ratification debates, this could only be done when the militia was deployed and where the militia was deployed. Now, the problem is that Congress is obscuring the fact that they have no constitutional authority to shut down Congress. They have to leave it open to the people. The one thing government cannot do is tell the people that they can't come, that they can't petition them. It's one thing to basically say, hey, you can't be unruly and civil disobedience and that type of stuff. Yeah, and they can arrest you for that. But if you're coming in with petitions in hand, and all they needed to do was have all these people out there and have somebody show up with all the signatures of those people and everybody else that they came back from the states with. Had they done the proper thing in understanding the Constitution on January 6th, America's heads would have exploded, because we would have learned, America would have learned things that they would have gone, how come we didn't learn this before? Why didn't we understand this? Because it would have shown a light on what was being done that previous summer throughout the streets of America with all of the Antifa and all of the actual rebellion occurring. When we actually start exposing what's been going on, we prove to you that our government is supporting, because this goes all the way back to North Carolina, where the Republican Party basically jumped on board and says, we're okay with the suppression of speech and the suppression of your rights because of racism. Actually, it wasn't because of racism. And actually, because the police were being constrained not to enforce the laws. Folks, we're really in a dangerous crossroads. And what should have happened on January 6th should have been a civil, not disorderly, this should have been civil discourse, not disorderly conduct. They should have been out there with a very clear, distinct, we wrote the petition already. I would have been happy to help them with, because we've already got it. The 12th Amendment must be executed. They could have done that. And I'm telling you what, folks, America and the world would be involved in a completely different dialogue today. Now, you can blame all of these leaders and blame everybody that went because everybody was ignorant. I've not heard anybody, nobody, Tucker Carlson, not one person's got this right. Bob Schultz and myself and the few people that we've talked to and blown their heads, they go, wow, you're absolutely right. And the more and more that people understand this, we can actually start pointing to and proving that what Congress is currently doing and what Biden is trying to do, all of these people are being insurrectionist and rebellious against the Constitution. And they all, based on Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, for another reason, they should be removed. I mean, it's not just one thing that they've done. They're not doing what they're supposed to do with the border. I mean, there's a pile. There is a train. There is a long list of failures to support the Constitution. That Pelosi and all of these people, Mitch McConnell, I'm telling you, I'm naming names, and they're afraid to let you know the truth. And they're not liking me. As a matter of fact, you know, I'm the bad guy, and they need to make me look that way so that you don't connect the dots. Because once you connect the dots, then you're going to be infected. You will have the virus of truth. And once you have the virus of truth, you start shedding. It's like that Lord of the Rings movie. People, you know, they've never seen it. I get it. But if you see that part in the Lord of the Rings when Gandalf breaks the spell that the king is under by Wormtongue, when you break that spell and all of a sudden you have this clarity, you can see the truth and you go, wow, oh my gosh, I can't believe I've been deceived. It changes everything. And the truth is important. This is why the focus of this whole show is about the truth. Anyway, let me keep going. The next line in Article 9. No bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed. Now, we covered these, and we've already covered this several times. We already have petitions that basically demand that the states stop doing this. no capitation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census or enumeration herein before directed to be taken. Now, so here's the problem. The 17th Amendment did not take that away. It created something, but it did not amend this limitation on the federal government. Why? Why did they leave that in there and then create the 17th Amendment? See, if you start connecting the dots, you start realizing that the idiots that were doing all of these things, they didn't understand that, you know, there were all these little things in the Constitution because they weren't familiar with it. Now, the other thing I want to talk about, because let me go back up, because this is a go back time, right? So I'm going to kind of highlight this area as green so I can, when I come back to this, I can, you know where I was. But I'm going to go back up to Section 8 of Article 1 and talk about the taxation and these the commerce here. And when we start looking at the commerce and shall regulate foreign commerce among the nations and among the several states, and when we look at the taxation of how to tax and all of that other stuff, when we look specifically at right there in Article or Section 9, here's my question, folks. If they can't tax exports, in other words, they are unable to tax exports, because I believe it's right here in Section 9 that no tax or duty shall be laid on articles exported from any state. Hold on here. Well, they're not doing that, but actually they are. Nowhere in the Constitution do they have the authority to tax corporations. Did you realize that? See, that's where states get their money. States get their money from taxing the revenues being created by the businesses. And back in those days, it was family business. It became larger businesses, franchises, or what have you. But every franchise and every operation in their state, that's how they make their money. The federal government was constrained that they couldn't do that. But all of a sudden, this door opened up. And it wasn't even in the 17th Amendment, because the 17th Amendment allowed the federal government to tax income, and that was individual income. And again, it violated this part of the Constitution. No capitation or other direct tax shall be laid, unless in proportion to the consensus. Now, again, the 17th Amendment says, you know, putting aside apportionment, we can actually direct, but they don't provide anything other than the fact. Also, we'll get into the 17th Amendment, but when we do, you got to realize that there's this thing called the uniformity clause, that things have to be uniform. There's nowhere where they can get away with actually saying, and we're going to do this progressively. We're going to attack these people and benefit these people. And that right there is a violation of the uniformity clause, that they have to be equal. They cannot, you know, hurt everybody. But bottom line, here's the secret of the corporation and corporation tax. They needed to make a ruling. They needed to get corporations into the front of the line by making them persons. And in so doing, they started aggrandizing the privileges and immunities of corporations, because now they're persons. And they did not amend the Constitution to be able to define that. They have no authority to define what a corporation is. They can't even create corporations because they don't have the authority to do that. Oh, wow. So you start really peeling this back, and you start looking from the bigger view, and you go, oh my gosh, everything that they've been doing in attacking and orchestrating, there's been many people that have been up there trying to do a good job and trying to do what they need to do. And they're just, it's like, you know, they get exhausted because the fight keeps going and going, and it never ends. And the reason it never ends is because of our illiteracy, because we don't know what we're doing, because we don't understand the Constitution. Therein lies the rub, folks, that we have to start looking at the Constitution for our solutions. It's kind of that simple, if you know what I mean. Anyway, so here's the next one. Here's the next one. No preferences shall be given by any regulation of commerce or revenue to the ports. And so, well, I will pick this up when we come back from the break. It's that important. So, folks, we will be right back after these two promos. Hang in there. This is, I hope you find this interesting, and I hope you're learning something from all of this. We'll be right back after this. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Now, I probably just set myself up for a little contention, so let me be clear here. How is it that taxing corporations is unconstitutional, you know, and how is it that they got there with this creating this personal entity to a corporation, like they're a real person, like a living human being? Can a corporation commit sin? Can they do things wrong? Well, just like anything, any entity can do that. But here's the thing, and forgive me for going down that little path. Right here, it says no capitation or other direct tax shall be laid. Okay, so that kind of clarifies that a direct tax on corporations is unconstitutional. Well, they saw corporations making all this money. And they go, well, this is just, we got to get a piece of this action. If you look at every other nation in the world, the reason why it was not allowed to do this is because we were to have free markets. As soon as you started creating taxation, it opened the door for the federal government or government that's taxing them to say, we're going to start regulating you now and getting into their knickers of how more they can tax and how more they can regulate. It becomes a very downward spiral. And so when they went down this path that no tax or duty shall be laid on articles exported from any state, well, how is that being violated? Well, who do you think is laying this extra increase on the cost of goods? Government. How? Because if you're going to go and tax the corporation, they have to pass that on to the cost of their goods. Or corporations would go out of business because corporations don't get free money. They have to earn. This is the free principles of economy. This is why America has been set up big time. Our corporations have been basically attacked while every other corporation in the world is being subsidized by their own government. Our government has been subsidizing communism on the backs of the American workers, on the backs of Americans, and so forth. There would be no need for unions if the government wasn't involved. Just trying to make things very clear for you folks. Trying to make things very clear. So here's the next one. This is the next subsection. And it's not broken down by numbers. At least I haven't done so. No preference shall be given by any regulation of commerce or revenue to the ports of one state over those of another. In other words, you can't prefer and you can't basically create a preference for New York, the port of New York and Norfolk and Miami or whatever. In other words, the federal government cannot allow states and or a state that's either in or outside of the importation area or what have you. Everybody has free access to any and all the ports. Okay? Nor shall vessels bound to or from one state be obliged to enter, clear, or pay duties in another. In other words, all ships can come in and come out not having to pay duties. Do you understand this? This is how free markets are to work. No money shall be drawn from the treasury, but in consequence of appropriations made by law and the regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. In other words, they're responsible to actually give you a complete accounting of how every penny is spent, and they don't do that. It's tough to find, and state legislators need to actually demand full disclosure of every penny being spent by the federal government. This is huge. As a matter of fact, this is a part of the separate petitions. It's actually a part of the definitizing process of the Constitution, because if you want to know where government's operating, follow the money, right? If all of a sudden you find out that there's this spending on this body of work, and you go, who's doing that? Follow the money. And you may find these secret entities that exist out there. But every state legislator, remember we talked about classified and who's doing what and we're not supposed to know? State legislators should know. There's no reason why they don't know. There is no reason why they can't be informed of what the federal government is doing, regardless if it's classified or not, because every single state legislature can be brought in and read into fundamental classifications. They may not even need to be, you know, taught, you know, all of the SCI stuff, but they should be cleared. And this actually comes into this whole concept, because I want you to understand this. That when a public servant gets elected, they could be exposed to these secrets, national secrets and so forth. Well, wow, wouldn't it be great if we started putting spies into the public service? Ah, but you know what? We're okay because they can't, they can't they? Actually, the oath of office kind of holds them from not being able to do that. Their obligation is to support the Constitution, not any foreign entity that, you know, has hired them to be spying on us, if you understand what I'm just saying. But more importantly, we have the responsibility of vetting. In other words, not anybody and everybody should be able to run for office. And as a matter of fact, people that are affiliated with any type of organization should not be able to run. You know, the Constitution says that we cannot have religious tests. We can have constitutional tests. We can have security tests and standards, because somebody that would be a huge security threat, like Oman and Ilyar or whatever their names are, AOC, all of these folks that are willing to just sell America out, they have no business in being able to be elected. That these standards need to be established, that the states need to do this. And as a matter of fact, I honestly believe that this needs to be an amendment, that the federal government demands and mandates that all candidates for federal and state positions, legislative positions specifically, and executive, you know, those important, and even judiciary, that they have to go through a fundamental background check to ensure that they could be exposed to classified material, that they wouldn't be a threat to our constitutional security. Doesn't that make sense? I mean, come on. That we have to start looking at this concept of doing that. And so I just need to basically put this out there, the tests for candidacies. And so this way I can get the, because I'm captioning right now. This is something that just came up because, you know, as I'm doing this, you know, my mind thinks and I go, wow, that's something we really need to do for clearances, right? INCES. Okay. So now I've captured that. Now we're going to add another petition to demand that all politicians have to have security clearance backgrounds before their name can even go on the ballot. Because we should not be exposed. I can tell you, folks, we've had actual operatives within our state legislature, within the national government, giving away secrets and so forth. And the government has been working with, if you want to know and you want to see how the Clinton administration committed treason, go to my podcast page. It's almost at the very bottom of that, of my podcast page. Just look for it's just a link out to the records of Congress where Winterm and Curry actually exposed Clinton in, you know, his dirty deeds in selling out American secrets to China so that he could bring money in for his reelection campaign. I'm telling you, folks, these things need to be ferreted through the legal process of treason and so forth, and he needs to be impeached. There's no money that should be going to the Clinton family and the Clinton crime syndicate. Period. They should be fully impeached, that they should have no access and be banned from public service and banned from even international travel or international exposure. They are an embarrassment to America and American history of what they did. Come on. You know, prove me otherwise. Prove me otherwise that we don't have the Constitution on our side. We do. It's just that because of our ignorance and our illiteracy, they're running rickshaw over us and taking every advantage they possibly can. And oh boy, we can take advantage of them this way. We're going to overrun their border. Okay, so anyway. Okay, so no title of nobility shall be granted by the United States. This is the final clause of Section 9. No title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office or profit of trust under them shall, without the consent of Congress, accept of any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state. Now, I don't have time to go through all of this and what this means, but I want you to understand that there are people that are receiving emoluments. We have a 13th Amendment that keeps people from being able to serve in Congress, as you would think here, that they shouldn't be able to receive these things, that they should actually be constrained from serving. Those people, lawyers. And the emolument is the Esquire of becoming a part of the Bar Association. The question is, the doctors, is that the same thing? Anyway, we're going into break. So when we come back from break, we will kind of, you know, do a go back on this, and then we'll move into Section 10. We'll be right back.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so the title of nobility, basically what it's saying is no title of nobility shall be granted by the United States. And so in other words, you don't become and actually, if you really think about it, a post-president, a former president of the United States is literally becomes a title of nobility because it's a permanent emolument. The fact that we retire them and pay them and allow them to become a leech on the people of America with security services and all those things. I know it's an evil world, but that's only an evil world, and it's so evil because we've made it that way. We've contributed to this intrigue of, you know, political affairs and so forth. Anyway, and no person holding any office of public trust. So what basically this is saying that this keeps the federal government from being able to create a title of nobility like a prince, you know, and we see what comes along with becoming a prince is a position, a station, and these responsibilities. So a former president gets exactly that. They get a stipend. They get, you know, $250,000 a year or whatever it is that they get for their retirement. And they get free security. They get money for a library. They get administrative funding and support. Are you kidding me? Folks, are you kidding me? That is a title of nobility. So, and I, you know, I appreciate the fact that George Washington, but all everything, when you go to Monticello, I think Monticello, Madison, a lot of these places have been bought up by communists and evil people. This goes back to the whole premise that no foreign entity can nor shall own any U.S. asset or resource. They don't have the authority. No state or government in America can allow that. It can't. It's not in the Constitution. But anyway, going back to this whole subsection, nowhere in here is there this, you know, authority for, you know, any person to be able to receive any gifts or anything from any king, prince, or foreign state. That's the whole point of this, right? Nor
accept a present or an emolument officer title. Now, the 13th Amendment goes kind of hand in hand with this. So when we hit the 13th Amendment, we'll really dive directly into this part of the Constitution and the 13th Amendment so that we can kind of show you what this doesn't include and why the 13th Amendment was necessary. Okay, so Section 10. There's a lot of similar things that the states can't do. No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation. Done. You can't do it. You can't be a part of a sub-government, or you can't enter into a treaty with any international entity or any domestic entity. Nowhere, it doesn't even identify. It just says that they cannot enter into a treaty. So in Oregon, Washington, and all of these other states entered into that Paris Treaty, the Paris Accord, and they entered into that treaty and said, we're going to abide by this. Guess what they did? They violated the Constitution right there. Inslee needs to be called out. All your governors and all your state legislatures need to be called out and say, this has to be shut down. This has to be shut down. And so this begs and demands the necessity of a petition. We have to petition them for allowing themselves and subjugating us to unconstitutional treaties. So the next step is, no state shall grant letters of marque or reprisal. Only Congress has this power. What do you mean? Go look this stuff up. This means the ability to capture assets and capture resources of criminals or enemies of the state. Now, can the state have an enemy? Maybe it can, but it cannot write and grant letters of marque and reprisal. Nor can they coin money or emit bills of credit. In other words, they can't print money and they can't coin money. But they also cannot make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts. In other words, they can only allow gold and silver coin to be your currency in the payment of legal debts, legal tender. They can't pass any bills of attainder or ex post facto laws, or laws impairing the obligations of contracts, or grant any title of nobility. You know, when we actually start immortalizing people and we start, you know, saying, oh, you're creating these monuments and those types of things, we're kind of on that road of doing that. We're kind of on that road of basically creating permanent emoluments and or titles of nobility. States can't do it. The federal government can't do it. Kind of clear to me. How about you? Anyway, the next subsection states, no state shall, without the consent of Congress, lay any imposts or duties on imports or exports except what may be absolutely necessary for executing its inspection laws and the net produce of all duties and imposts laid by any state or imports or exports shall be for the use of the Treasury of the United States. So just to be clear here, you know, when a ship comes in, they don't have free access. They have to pay. There's fees and duties and so forth for them to be able to come and use the port facility to offload their materials and so forth. And so these fees and so forth, these states can actually, you know, if it's proven that everything that's coming in on this one ship is going to pass through this state, then they can lay a duty and or a tax that's reasonable on all of these goods. If they can't prove it, it's going to be, you know, going in every which direction because it may be something for Walmart or what have you, then they would pass that duty upon, you know, the corporation that would be receiving that. But it's just it's not an extra duty. It's only to capture what their costs are. And if you look at those duties and everything else, it's one of those things
that, you know, they, because they have to maintain their facilities. They have to maintain those cranes and their roadways and their wharfs. And there's a lot going into the operations of a port. When a city or a private entity creates a port and a port facility, there's a lot of things that they've got to do. And so it's not that it can't make money. It has the ability to make money, but it cannot. It cannot make money off of the states. It can basically pass whatever it believes its fees would be that would be reasonable that the states would have to pay. Anyway, so no state shall, without the consent of Congress, lay any imposts or duties or imports on the exports except what may be absolutely necessary for executing its inspection laws. And the net produce of all duties and imposts laid by any state on imports or exports shall be for the use of the Treasury of the United States, and all such laws shall be subject to the revision and control of the Congress. Here's the last one. We've got 2 minutes to do this before the show is over. No state shall, without the consent of Congress, lay any duty of tonnage, keep troops, or ships of war in time of peace, enter into any agreement or compact with another state. There you go. So there's the compact clause. They can't create a compact with another state or with a foreign power or engage in war unless actually invaded or in such imminent danger as will not admit of delay. In other words, they got to act now, they got to do this. And, you know, they're yelling across the boundary, come help us, or we need you to do this, or what have you. So their hands are really tied in being able to, you know, operate in all of these different alliances. And why did they do this? Because I told you that under the Articles of Confederation, there were plenty of states that were actually creating trade treaties with foreign entities and trying to give themselves advantages over other states when the Articles of Confederation stated that states could not do that. And so this Constitution basically did the same thing. But what was the difference? What was the difference between the federal Constitution and the Articles of Confederation? Enforcement. See, the federal government now has the ability to enforce these laws by calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union. Articles of Confederation had no teeth. This is why the states, as soon as they started realizing, you know, hey, you know, we could go do this, it kind of dissolves, you know, what we all agreed upon, but you know what? We can do it, so we're going to go ahead and do it. That's why many and more states were heading down that path of actually, I'll just say, you're going outside the boundaries of the Articles of Confederation, and it was creating chaos. The Confederacy at that point in time, or the United States government at that point in time, was in peril because these states could not abide and refused to abide by the spirit of the Articles of Confederation. It forced the need of the U.S. Constitution, demanded it. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. And when we come back, we'll be picking up Article 2 in our next episode. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org. www.takeactionpodcast.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.